Heart to Heart is being brought to you by Zunich Advisory Services. Here's Jackie LeBeau.
Good morning, everybody. Hey, I know it's a little dreary out there, but you know what they say, April showers bring May flowers, and that weather report is looking good for tomorrow with Easter coming up, and I don't know about you guys, but I'm already doing my Easter preparations. Yesterday, I stopped at Miller's Garden Center, and I got some gorgeous flowers and my little fix of early spring there, so I've got all my Easter flowers going, and now I've got candy to make. I've got my grandmother's coconut candy and peanut butter eggs. So I've got all kinds of things on my to-do list this week. But we're going to have a gorgeous weekend. And so look for that sunshine tomorrow, okay? All right, so today I have a very special guest because I was looking for somebody to fill in this morning. And my husband graciously volunteered. So Larry is here with us this morning, and I always tell him he is my absolutely favorite skeptic of all time. So we're going to talk a little bit about his experiences with animal communication, and let's just bring him right on.
Good morning, everyone. It's a pleasure to be here, and I'm glad to be talking to all of you.
Yeah, he usually listens from his home office, but he's in the studio today with me and Gil, so he's getting it firsthand. And you know, I said, well, this will be perfect because I know how hard it is for everybody. You know, even those who do animal communication. You know, we all have that skepticism, and you know, he actually traveled with me to New York for one of our first animal communication training sessions, and that was an eye opener, wasn't it, honey?
Yes, it was, and I did. At that time, I was becoming enamored of the possibility all this worked, but I was quite sure I wouldn't be able to do it. But I do come from an engineering background, and I started out a skeptic. I did not think you could talk to animals, let alone over distances and other things that I've come to find to be quite true.
Well, let's tell everybody, an engineering background is, that's putting it mildly, because Larry is a electrical engineer, and he works on doing computer programming for the search and rescue system for the United States.
My job is to help build systems that use satellites to save people in distress all over the world. It's an international cooperative, and I program computers. I do analysis. We're working on a whole new satellite system. I'm very involved in that, and I'm actually one of the technical leads for the United States, the organization called NOAA in this area. We work with NASA, and we build search and rescue systems that are working on a global basis.
Yeah, so I have to tell everybody, so this was a big leap. A big leap. But what I like about Larry, and I like about most skeptics, is being skeptic just makes you look harder into what you're hearing and test it for yourself, as we have to do with all things when we hear new theories and new ideas, and see what works for us and what we believe and what we don't believe. But I love when skeptics keep the open mind, because they can still evaluate things from all points of view and be open to whatever they find. They don't have a set decision on how something is to be in the end. I love that about the engineering side of you, honey.
Thank you. I'll mention two things. Our very first experience, we had someone on the phone. We were having trouble with
Was our experience with animal communication.
With animal communication, and we had just acquired more or less a rescue situation, a very large dog, a Great Pyrenees, and he was in effect wrecking our home when we would go away, and we didn't understand why. And we had someone in Nevada that we called to ask my buddy Bear what was bothering him when we left the house. And I, being an engineer, I said, well, how would you even do this when you're in the same room, let alone from Nevada? But this woman was able to not only help us with what was going on with Bear, which was really just insecurity. He was afraid of being left behind again. But she was able to, I tested her, which wasn't fair.
Yes, you had your test questions.
And I asked her to tell me about where Bear gets a drink in the backyard, because it's very unique. I had built a fountain out back with rocks and waterfalls and so on. And instead of going to his bowl, he would drink out of there. And she actually very accurately described that. And that was one of my first breaks with, how in the world could she have come up with anything unless she was in touch with him? And my other favorite later on, you've heard from Don Heyman on this show, who was our mentor when we went to New York, as Jackie mentioned, to learn about animal communication. And one of the first times she was on the phone with another Great Pyrenees and discussing stomach problems. And she very quickly said, but wait a minute, something's wrong with this dog's back. I almost can feel all this pain and torquing, and something's wrong. Do you know about that? And here, she obviously knew nothing about it, but she was describing what was really going on is that she had a stomach ache because of the medication. She had just had an operation to fix her knee and her back. And Dawn had no way of knowing that either. Some of these experiences just, no matter how hard I tried as an engineer to explain it away, I couldn't find other than the logical conclusion that animal communication certainly works, even at distances.
Yeah. Well, and that's good because, as Larry mentioned, you know, you're always looking for the explanation when things come up that are out of the ordinary for ourselves. And not just with animal communication, the same goes for spiritual experiences people have of their own, whether they're sensing loved ones on the other side with little signs that they're giving them or angels. You know, we always look for, in our reality, like, what could be the explanation for that? And you know what happens sometimes? We can't come up with an explanation. So we have to sort of take it for what it may be, which is exactly that. So he had to do that too. It was a stretch.
And believe me, some of the people I work with still think I'm crazy. But that's okay. I'm confident that there is more going on in this world. I used to say, if I can't see it, touch it, or hold it in my hand, it doesn't exist. But I've come a long way, because in this world, there's a lot going on that we can't explain. We can't even explain gravity, really. And many things that we use every day, radio waves, light, we understand how it works, but we don't really understand exactly how and what it's all made up of. We can do things with it, but the world is full of mysteries, and animal communication and the other talents my wife has, the speaking to spirit on the other side, these are things that really go on. We walk in our woods together with our dogs, and we have both experienced smelling all of a sudden a pipe or a cigar, and we're out in the woods by ourselves. And we have figured out that that's my father, who loved to smoke cherry tobacco, mm-hmm. and cigars and so on. And he's visiting from the other side when we're out there.
Yeah, it's a very distinctive smell. It's not so, you know, you're thinking, well, is somebody burning something? And then you're thinking, no, they're not burning cherry tobacco.
No, I have no other way to explain it than Dad was visiting.
But, you know, Larry mentioned about how Bear described where he drank. And one thing about that I wanted to tell people, we've mentioned before, you know, I've been contacted by a number of people on learning themselves to do animal communication. And one of the ways that animals communicate with us is through pictures. And that's how we communicate with them, too. But even when Bear was describing, you know, where he drank from this fountain, which Larry had actually built, this little waterfall, it wasn't exactly what it looked like to us, right, honey?
Correct. The animal communicator described it. She says, I think it must be a gutter. It's like there's stones and concrete and stuff and the water coming out. So maybe it's the gutter.
Right.
And you have to be able to think about, well, there are no gutters that he can drink out of. Actually, we run those in pipes underground to get them away from the house. So that can't explain it. And people do wonder when I also have had animal communication experiences of my own. I'm certainly not as good at it as Jackie, but I have succeeded in doing this. And it isn't like you hear things in perfect sentences in your head. You get an image, you get a feeling. And if you're honest with yourself, you say, well, was that my imagination or did I really get that from somewhere else? And there are times it's very clear because the image is something you really didn't have in your memory banks, or the image or the words that come to mind are not the way you would have worded it. And if you're trying to communicate with an animal, the chances are you're getting it from there.
Yeah, and it's actually a couple-step process. I wanted to bring that up, too, because as Larry said, Bear described what this looked like. Now, there's a couple things there we have to keep in mind. When Bear is describing something to somebody else, you know, this gal in Nevada, she's interpreting what he's describing to her. So there you have a little bit of a change that something could happen, you know, in how she twists what he's saying and how she words it to us. And also, you know, as Bear is looking at that and describing it to her, what he sees when he sees that waterfall is going to be different than what I see, you know, what he picks out of that. So I always tell people, think about police work. You know, when they ask different people to describe the scene of an accident or the scene of a crime, everybody's going to remember something a little different, you know, than the other person, the person standing right beside them. You know, you'll have a different sense of the time between things, a different sense of, you know, what they saw or how the action was. And, you know, it's sort of like that game, you know, where, you know, you pass a phrase from one person to the next. Everything gets a little bit of an interpretation with it. So think about that, too, as you try this with your own animals at home. You know, they'll give you a little something. And if it doesn't look exactly the way you would have described it to somebody, that doesn't mean they're not showing you exactly what you think they're showing you. It's their interpretation of that.
And I'll agree that perception is extremely important in everything we do. And it made me also think back to some of those first lessons, if you would, from Dawn, that what people don't realize is that they've been talking to their animals all their lives.
Yeah,
And that really opened my eyes. We all say, oh, you want a cookie, don't you? Or, you know, I know you want to go out. Let's go. And yes, there is body language and there's other signals our animals give us. But if you open your mind to this, you'll recognize that dogs and cats, horses, these are very sophisticated
birds.
Beings. They're not just animals. They have different ways of seeing the world, and they're not the same, but they do have minds, and they let us know things. And if we have an open mind about it, we'll find we've been talking to them all our lives. We just didn't put it in that context.
Yeah, I always tell that. I try to remember to tell that to people who contact me for animal communication. They'll say, well, I think, and then they'll describe something with their animal. And as it turns out, you know, I always tell them, you know your animal better than anybody, and you've been getting things. So trust what you get, because when I check in with the animal, I find out they were right on 100%. Okay, so I think it's time for us to take a short break, and then we'll be back with more chit-chat on Heart to Heart.
Heart to Heart is being brought to you by Zunich Advisory Services.
Okay, we're back. And Gil, I'm going to invite you to join in the conversation this morning. We were chatting
no,
a little bit because Gil always says no, but we were talking about how engineers, he was reminding us that engineers are not always that skeptical, and he certainly had a point there, and Larry agreed too, because of course he knows better, but you know, it's just that, you know, you have to think outside the box, right, Gil?
Engineers prefer to consider themselves as skeptical.
Oh, I see. It's a preference.
Oh yeah. Yeah. It's not an ingrained thing.
Okay.
We were talking about a number of engineers that I have known and worked with over the years, and everyone is a little different. Sorry.
I think you made a good point that a successful engineer has to be able to do what we call think outside of the box.
Right.
You have to be able to look at things, step back, and make your own decisions and go in a different direction if what you're doing is not working. However, maybe skeptic's not quite the right word, but you have to be analytical. You have to be able to ask yourself, how is that possible? What's the right answer? What's the wrong?
See, I don't agree with that.
Okay, go ahead.
I don't agree with that.
Okay.
Of the engineers that I've known, and one particular engineer that I can pinpoint on this one, actually came up with a communication system that was unknown at the time that he came up with it. And I asked him, I said, you know, well, boy, you got all this worked out. Oh, no, I just put it together, see if it's what it's going to do. You know, he put a $3,000 device together just to see what it would do. And that's why I talk about not being skeptical. They're willing to try just about anything.
But they still have to have that analytical capability.
Well, I guess
skeptic is, I see your point, and maybe skeptic isn't always the right word to use in this sense. Maybe it's that you still have to be able to, you made me think of I was working early years in this area, and a guy with a doctorate said to me, well, that problem is what we call NP incomplete. I can't get quite the right terminology.
Right.
And he said, you can't solve it that way.
Yeah.
And I said, oh.
Want to bet?
you shouldn't have said that.
Yeah.
And I did. I did solve it the way I told him I wanted to. And a few weeks later, I brought it back to him. And he was impressed. And we had a good time with it because he did find a few of the flaws I had missed. And together, we ended up completing the job. And it worked.
But if you told that to somebody originally, okay, that you were, you know, there's got to be an answer to this.
Mm-hmm.
That minds that, you know, have many minds making far more money than all the rest of us put together have tried this and nothing happened. And you usually find a person saying, well, you know, we tried that, but it didn't.
That's true.
It didn't work, you know, so you might as well not waste your time. Most engineers, if you say you shouldn't waste your time on this project, will tell you, if they're honest, oh, that was the wrong thing to say to me.
Yeah. That's the challenge.
Yeah.
That's true. But still, when faced with that someone in Nevada could talk to my dog, and the dog didn't even have to get on the phone.
How do you know?
Right, but my doubts were there.
You don't know that.
You're right. But you're actually lending to the point very successfully that the world is full of things we can't explain, and
That's
if we
true.
Keep an open mind, we'll find that there are things to learn from that.
Here's a good example. You've been in this business for a while. More than 2 or 3 years. I've been in this business a little longer than 2 or 3 years also. If you would have told me in 1962, when I got into communications in the Washington area, that I would be carrying my phone in my pocket, okay? And it would know more than I did What do you think I would have said at that point?
The same thing I would have said.
Yeah, right.
You would have said, what, have you been reading I'm not the Dick Tracy.
Yeah, the Dick Tracy comic book.
Right.
But if you stop and look, and we've talked about this before, if you stop and look, every science fiction program that has been on the air from, I think, year one, okay, has had items in it. The one that comes to mind is Flash Gordon. Do you go back to Flash? You know who I'm talking about?
Mm-hmm.
She doesn't.
Sure.
She has no idea.
I wasn't a comic book person.
Really?
Larry knows.
Yeah, but Flash Gordon's a little bit before my time, but I do definitely
still,
know.
Yeah. Do you know what Flash Gordon wore to catch the bad guys?
You'll have to help me.
An Aqualung.
An Aqualung?
Yep. Self-contained breathing apparatus.
Okay.
Okay. Now, go back to Dick Tracy. And Jackie, if you tell me you don't remember Dick Tracy, I'm going to turn your mic off.
I remember Dick Tracy.
And we're just going to sit over here and have a conversation. You're going to be out of it. But what did Dick Tracy have on his wrist?
Well, obviously the watch with the television
screen, the
video
TV
communications
screen
in it.
Oh, not that was later.
Oh.
Oh, it was still a walkie-talkie.
It was a communication device. Do you know what the average person on the street would tell you at that point?
Of course.
What do you think they said?
That's impossible.
It's impossible. Go back to Captain Kirk. Now, Jackie, if you come up with this, I just never watched that. Now, I'm talking about the original Captain Kirk.
Yeah, she knows Star Trek.
Yeah,
I know a lot of Star Trek.
Yeah, I figured. Anyhow, what did he have when he would communicate with the Enterprise?
Oh,
what was he holding in his hand?
I love this.
A communicator, which is like a flip-up cell phone.
I was going to say, what did it look like?
Yeah.
It looked like a flip phone. But they were not there then.
Yeah, but I went the transporter.
We're still working on that.
Yeah, well,
and now,
want your molecules flash around the universe
and that one, that gets into the realm of what this engineer would still say sounds impossible, but you're really touching on a point, and I made this point in another interview at one time, that today's magic is tomorrow's science.
Yes, absolutely.
And
why? There is a reason. There is absolutely a reason. And we go back to what we said originally. Most engineers, if they're any good at all, will see that and say, you know what? Wonder if I could put that together, see whether that would work.
I can do that.
Has no analytical, and when you said analytical, it has no analytical basis in fact. What it did is most engineers that I know have very active imaginations.
Well, you know, Einstein had that famous quote about your imagination is more important than anything else.
Yes, I don't remember the quote, but all right, so I sit corrected.
You're
I think the original point was that I did come into this, we'll avoid the skeptic word, but we'll say there were doubts. How does that work? Can I believe this? And I tested and I analyzed and I said, well, I'm being proven otherwise. And maybe you're exactly right.
But you were looking for proof. You were looking for some analytical reason that this occurred. And they're really, if you get right down to it, if you look at it analytically, mm-hmm. there is no way that, you know. It's like the communicator of Star Trek: The Next Generation, where they have the little Enterprise insignia that they just tap. That's available now today.
Right.
At the time that was come up with, nobody had any idea what it was. But it took an engineer somewhere along the line to say, that's pretty cool. Wonder if I could build one of them.
These engineers are pretty special people.
Yet, I still can't. I actually could try to give you an engineering explanation for what we'll summarize as telepathy. That's what I call animal communication in a general sense. And people use telepathy between each other, too.
Sure.
We all innately do these things. But what is telepathy? Is it and I'll call it a brainwave.
A mind melt.
A mind melt.
All right. But
here we are.
Really?
Just like electromagnetic radiation,
yes.
I can describe it mathematically, but I can't actually tell you what it is made of. It's energy. I mean, I can give you all
right.
our words,
yeah.
but there's still a leap of faith.
But you,
in the full understanding, and that goes for this too.
Here is a good example. And at one time, I had a canine-trained German Shepherd. And when you look at police dogs, canine dogs of some type, the really good canine teams will sit there and say nothing.
Right.
And both the human member of that team and the canine member of that team will operate in the same direction.
Yeah.
Okay? Now, okay? So, hey, if Dr. Spock can use the, you know, use the mind melt, why not?
Yeah.
You know,
exactly.
When you
and
get to
do.
It.
Huh? We do. And you did that, you know, with Buck, too. You guys had that, you know.
Oh,
you
yeah.
knew what each other wanted and where you were going and what you were doing. You don't have to talk.
Yeah, because if you didn't, he would sit on you.
Yeah.
So, you know, I had no choice there.
We've seen our Great Pyrenees work in tandem, patrolling the property. And one goes
right.
one way, one goes the other. And
they both know where they are.
Exactly.
And when something's really up, they go silent. And that's when you go, wait a minute, something must be
something
out
is
there.
Not right.
When they're barking, it's more casual. So
yeah.
and they work very much together.
Yeah.
But
all
that's
should,
why.
So, should we go back to heart to heart?
No. Why not?
We're having
more
a good time.
She gets every other week.
That's right. You guys just.
This
have
is
fun.
Our week.
That was
but
great.
No, but it is true. When you say you know I've seen these police teams mm-hmm. work together, especially bomb dogs. They're really good at that.
Yeah.
Buck was a weapons detection dog.
Okay.
And I didn't have the communications with him that I'm sure his trainer
right.
or his handler did.
Right.
Okay. And I don't know what the whole story was there and wasn't allowed to check. So, but anyway, I'm sure that to be any good at that, you have to be able to communicate with the animal silently.
Mm-hmm.
There is only one way you can do that, and that's mind
to mind.
Mind to mind.
Absolutely.
And you know we're using the logical explanation for telepathy.
Telepathy. Mm-hmm.
Right.
But maybe that's not like you were amazed that somebody from Nevada could. Speak to your dog,
mm-hmm.
right? Or communicate with the dog. Who is to say and who could actually cover the fact that somebody from California or somebody from New York or somebody from Florida could not communicate with somebody else?
Exactly.
And Dr. Spock did it.
Right.
You know,
and there's real world examples of this. People usually it's more associated with tragedy, but people know thousands of miles away when something's happened to a loved one, and that's because that kind of energy travels, particularly when it's intense.
That's true.
Yeah,
I have heard indications where somebody a loved one has died somewhere,
right.
wherever, somewhere in the world. And all of a sudden, the person sitting 2,000 miles away says, I better call because something's
wrong.
Exactly.
Yeah. They might not know what it is.
Right.
But there is a feeling that comes over them. And who's to say, you know, we're using the humanistic boundaries. We're saying, well, to communicate to California, we need a satellite. Maybe. Maybe not.
Right.
That's well,
exactly
obviously,
right.
obviously, indigenous people in Australia and Native American cultures in the U.S. had ways of communicating great distances, you know, and they definitely used telepathy for that.
And, you know, I'm going to use that word skeptic, but this time I'm going to put it that the skeptic would say.
You don't want to get yelled at.
The skeptic would say, oh, they were using smoke signals that bomb squad you were talking about. The guy's using a hand signal to the dog eye contact.
No.
And the truth is body language, there's other things we communicate with, but it's not limited to what we can see and those simple explanations. There's other things going on, and telepathy and more happen around us every day.
But I love that. I love that description you gave about your dog, Buck, you know, knowing those things and being trained that way, because, you know, this is a good reminder for everybody that, you know, we're thinking this is something new, but this is something, you know, professionals in the military have been using, you know,
for a long time.
You know, so just like everything else, some things start there and then they come down, you know, and reach the public. But there's a perfect example where
good example of that was I happened to be in a store with him, and he was one of the very few dogs that most store owners, you know, didn't say anything when I'd bring him in. But there was a lady in that store. I have no idea who she was. And I still don't know, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Buck was standing next to her, not in any sort of threatening manner, just standing there. And she put her hand on the back of his neck. And he just looked at her and sat down.
Interesting.
Now, she did not say anything. She did not, you know, she said, oh, you have a very well-trained dog. That was the end of the conversation.
So that was in her thought.
Right. I don't know. I cannot tell you.
But either way, they got along without any.
Yeah. No.
Any pretense.
Right.
They communicated without even knowing at each other, or she didn't maybe even realize it. But
I think she did. I really think she was.
At which level? Maybe it wasn't entirely conscious, but they got along without any further outside obvious interaction.
Well, trust me, honey, not everybody would put their hand on Buck's neck. What was he, 130 pounds, Gil?
Yeah. 130 pounds.
I understand. And I once met an attack dog that I didn't know was an attack dog, but I just said, good doggy. And he actually wagged his tail, and he stood his ground, but he didn't do anything. And when I told his master about it later that day, he said, the dog didn't attack you? And I said, no. We got along just fine.
But they read your intent, and obviously you had no... Right.
You were no threat.
Yeah, you were all good intent. So,
okay.
Wonderful.
End of our conversation, because we got to take a break.
All right, we're going to take a break, and now I'll come back with what's coming next week. Okay, we're back, everybody. I have to tell you, that was fun. We don't always get a chance to just chit-chat about things on our mind and get Gil in on it, so I was loving that. So I want to tell everybody, next week, I have a young lady coming on. It's a friend of mine. It's Jean Markey, and she is the owner and operator of her own business. It's Sports and Therapeutic Massage Center. It's located in the Athletic Club of York, and she opened that business in 1994, so she's been doing that for 20 years. So she has over 20 years experience in that, as well as she is now a Reiki master, you know, which is an energy work that she does to tailor for people's conditions, whether they are illnesses or problems that they have in her body. She specializes in deep tissue and Swedish massage. She does hot stone massage, Reiki, facial toning, and she is also certified as a Tai Chi Cha instructor and a Seijaku instructor since 1997. So I thought we'd talk a little bit about those modalities, because that's sort of a way of doing a moving meditation. And we've talked in the past about how valuable that is to everybody. So I'm looking forward to Jean coming on next week. I also want everybody to mark your calendars. I'll be participating in the Spirit Network Festival that's coming up Sunday, April 27th from 9 to 4. It's at the Clarion Hotel and Conference Center, Harrisburg West. It's actually outside New Cumberland. So anything that's holistic, organic, psychic, or spiritual, there's going to be guest speakers, lectures, psychic fairy that will be doing readings. So there'll be a number of people doing mediumship readings as well as tarot readings and angel readings. So if you want to touch base with that and check in with everybody, this is the perfect place. So mark your calendar and plan to join us. It's really going to be a fun day. So everybody, that takes us down to the wire here for Heart to Heart. Everybody have a happy Easter and a wonderful time with your families. And we'll see you next Tuesday.
Heart to Heart is being brought to you by Zunich Advisory Services. News is coming up. ABC News at the top of the hour. And we'll take a look at Real Country Radar weather. And then it's time for Better Living. A quick look at our forecast. Periods of rain, a few rumbles of thunder possibly. Morning highs of 65 will drop to near 40 by this afternoon. Tonight, windy, a mix of rain, possibly a snow shower this evening. Will give way to clearing overnight and cold and a low of 24. News is coming up.